anytime I notice a negative thing creeps in, I just kind of tell myself to shut up. I kind of tell myself to like carry on forward because it's what I practice. And so that's why it's important to talk about the practical training, because if you don't have that, the words mean nothing. You just have to somehow remove the feeling that success means that you get to the chains. That's not success. Success is climbing well. Success is climbing well. It's not getting to the chains, and climbing well might get you to the chains. If you're physically capable, you'll get to the chains if you climb well.
Hey, welcome to the Test Piece Podcast. This podcast is about all things high-level climbing. My name's Joshua Horsley. I've been climbing for 25 years, and I love staying at the cutting edge of climbing.
Hi, my name is Timothy Kang. I'm a pro climber, a coach, and a route setter, and climbing is my life.
We started the podcast to explore and articulate what it takes to climb at a high level, what it takes to go from good to great. Okay, let's start the podcast. Tim, my dude, how's it going, man?
What's up, Josh? I am back. We're both in mountain time. Wow.
Woo, mountain time. That's like the official, that's like climber time.
That's climber time. It's cool that it's called mountain time.
Yeah. I think this might be my first podcast on the road. You're always on the road, but now I'm finally experiencing, you should see my, I feel like my background's actually better here, but my setup is kind of janky. Everything's propped up on empty boxes.
It's stressful to make sure that everything's like consistent.
So you're in Salt Lake City. You just were at, what were you at? The NACS Cup? I don't want to butcher.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a North American Cup Series. So there's actually an Israeli athlete also here and a bunch of Canadians. The Israeli athlete's very strong. His name's Yuval Shemla. He's been in many World Cups. He's like the Israeli Ninja Warrior, I think. Like celebrity guy, but he's super strong. He's done a lot of World Cups, and he, I think, qualified right now. He's in like third place. It's still going on right now, so I don't know what the scores are, but I work with a couple athletes who are competing.
Wait, Tim, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think when we were last chatting, you were going to compete there and some things happened. So maybe you can tell people how you're unfortunately not competing against the Israeli
Warrior. Right. Maybe, maybe fortunately I'm not competing, but basically I waited. You can register for competitions, you know, shortly before they actually happen. And the registration period, it extends for like a fee, but the last day to register for the normal fee was the 15th of April, and it's the 26th today. So like 2 weeks ago, and we podcasted with Palmer recently, and I asked him at the end, I said, are you going to compete? Cause you know, I'm going to see you in Salt Lake. And I was going to sign up for the comp like a couple days after that. And he was like, no, there's a wait list now. It's capped for registrations. And I was like, what? Like they've never really done that for bouldering. And the weird thing was that they told us that lead was going to be capped. So it's not like you would have expected that boulders would change to being capped. So I kind of waited, but yeah, I waited too long. And there were 110 people signed up for, so that's a lot. That's a ton of people. I mean, I heard that qualification is going to end at 9:30 tonight, and they started at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, including going through all the women, it's going to take like the entire day. So I could not sign up, but my knee is not 100%. It's not even close. And I literally walked into the venue and I watched, and the first boulder I saw had two left heel hooks that were like very crucial. And I have a left knee injury, and I was like, cool. Glad I didn't do this because I can't even do one of those boulders.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad you're not competing, just because I know you're a competitor. I know you're going to get in that mindset, and I think that the risk isn't worth the reward there. But yeah. I also think you have a hilarious pro tip there. Sign up for the comp. Or this could be like, oh, I really want to go to Rocklands and do Sky. It's like, buy your plane ticket. Like,
book your flight.
Yeah. Some basic 101 there, Tim. But I think it's, I'm just going to say that that's somehow the universe helping you not get injured. But you're still having fun out there. It's always fun to see it. And I know you coach some guys who are competing. So good luck to them.
Yeah.
I don't want no spoiler. This is like our latest recording compared to release date because we were so busy. But it is fun just kind of being around the most current news. You know, you're at the comp right now, seeing everything. Is there anything that you saw in, I guess it's only been qualifiers, that you thought was interesting or different from comps you've been to recently?
Definitely, actually. So I got to watch most of the lead on stream. an elite setting is some of the better setting that I think I've seen in American competitions. That's pretty much all I have to say there. But actually, no, the separation was much, much closer than like ever before that I've seen in elite events as well. Generally, in America, you'll see a couple people do really, really, really well, and then everybody else kind of like funnels together. But actually, the winner, I think, won by 1 point. And then in finals, the point separation was basically 1 point down or so, like 1 to 2 or 3 points down. Every person was separated that way. That's really cool. It kind of shows the difference in level, but it also shows that everybody is closer to level in like the higher range. And also just watching them compete and climb, in my opinion, I'm a heavily lead focused competitor when I was in competitions a lot. And a lot of my read was that not that many people even were comfortable lead climbing or even like quote unquote knew how to lead climb. They were just like really, really strong climbers and really strong boulderers who would like obviously do very well in lead, but that's a very different thing than watching a lead climber. And if you even look at like lead climbing competitions in the World Cups, like the best lead climbers in the world are, a lot of them are climbing outside. Not, you know, that many of them compete. I guess you could say the same thing for bouldering, but in America, that's definitely true. There are not that many people who like sport climb in general, but yeah, I watched the lead and I was like, wow, I was very impressed. It seemed really difficult to make it to a semi or a final this time. And that's also something that's usually not the case. In bouldering, it was the first time that I had seen in a qualification that they did two groups, which is how they do the World Cups. And so that's pretty cool. It's very different. So basically the boulders look really similar. There's like a group A set of boulders and a group B set of boulders. And they're kind of side by side. So the group one boulder, for example, today was a slab that had like a press start and then like some delicate ending. The B boulder was the same. It turned out to be a little bit easier. The way it works is you basically top 20 go to semis, but you need to place top 10 in your group. So you basically still compete only against your group. And they just take top 10. So even if in group B, somebody tops all five climbs and they flash all of them and you get two tops in group A, if that's the best score out of the group A boulders, you're in first place, even though group B, somebody topped all five climbs. So I got to see that today. It was the case where group B boulders were a lot easier. So it was kind of confusing to watch, but then you look at the scores and you're like, okay, wow, like this makes a little bit more sense. That helps a lot because you can run out of 100, and there were 120 competitors, actually, you can run 60 competitors simultaneously on just two different groups. So it goes by a lot, lot faster. And the alternative to that is going, 120th in the round is really, you know, it takes a long time. You're in isolation. Everybody has to enter isolation at the same time. So if you go first, you just stay in ISO less. If you're going last, you stay in ISO for like 8 hours.
Gosh, I wish comps were more simple. It makes me think of some of the conversations we had about the TBF series, the Boulder Field series, and just like all those rules. And it also makes me think of when I would compete and you talk about isolation. And I mean, people may not know that, like, you have to sit in the back and, you know, you can't watch other people climb. And it's just kind of like, there's this whole side of competing that people don't see. You see people step out and they climb. You're like, oh, that looks cool. I like that. But it's very different to sit around all day, like get cold, like not really have the food you want, like get tired and get bored. And it's so different from just feeling, oh, I'm going to go session right now. I feel good. Like let's get psyched. It's a side of it that I think is underappreciated. And to be honest, not that fun, but it's part of the scene, part of competing.
Yeah, totally. No, it's good insight. I think the comp game is pretty difficult. It's not as simple as just being able to watch a semi stream or a final stream. Like people earn their spots there through a very hectic qualifier. I mean, everybody, I just watched for hours and it's still going on for another couple hours. And these guys are in there and the girls are in there, you know, earning their spots, and it is, their energy in there is pretty cool. Actually, I like watching qualifiers. Last note on something I've noticed, that I, you know, haven't watched too many comps in the last like couple years, but the setting is getting better. It's something that was kind of exciting, is what I look for when I'm looking at setting, from a competitor standpoint, but also from a route setter standpoint, is to see anything that is useless. And so what I mean by that is you only have five boulders to, in this qualifier format. All qualification formats are slightly different, but in this one, it's on site. You get, you know, 4 or 5 minutes on, 4 or 5 minutes off. You don't get any beta. You get to try, and you just basically get a zone, or you get a top, or you get no score, and you count your attempts. And if there's a useless zone where, let's say, everybody gets to the zone first try on a climb, the zone is useless. It doesn't separate any score. I didn't see that. There was not very much useless scores. It did seem a little bit too easy. Some of the boulders seem a little bit too easy where they, you know, funneled scores a little bit too tightly, but they still had separation. And in lead as well, it didn't seem like there's too many useless movements. Like every movement added up to something and like caused a little bit of discomfort. And that's good. I think that's a really good thing. And basically what I mean is, instead of punishing mistakes, like you don't want to have 99 people flash zone one, but if one person doesn't, just because they made one small mistake, that mistake costs way, way more than earning anything out of points. And that's not how climbing works. Climbing in any context doesn't work that way. You have to earn and get rewarded on success in climbing. And that's what we want to see in competitions. It's really hard to do that in a five boulder on-site format, but I think route setting can accomplish that. And it seemed like they were doing that really well.
Route setting is so hard for comps. What you're saying is so hard to, you put it really well about not punishing people for mistakes, because sometimes you just, your foot pops, but does that mean you're like the worst climber ever? It's like, no, you want to reward the best climbers, not the ones who just or punish people who do stupid little accidents. So well said. Hard job. Thank you, route setters. Tim, I'm on mountain time, but I'm in Denver, Colorado. You know, spent some time in Boulder too. I freaking love it here, dude. I freaking love it here. I've just been in the climbing community, just steeped, like just every day meeting with different people that, you know, friends, more podcasts. I actually haven't even been to any climbing gyms in the area, despite there being like 9 climbing gyms around me. Like there's probably like 9 good climbing gyms within 20 minutes of me. I didn't get to go outdoors this trip. I don't think it's unlikely at this point. And regardless of all of that, missing out on some of the best gyms in the world, some of the best outdoor climbing in the world, I'm still having a blast because the community is so, it's a good spot. I've been saying how Boulder is like it's always been that like sinkhole of people who wanted to climb hard. And then, you know, Salt Lake has really come up. I'm always repping my hood in the Tahoe area and saying like, oh, this is going to be the next place. There's something special still going on here. This is not a bad place to live. And I'm just grateful to get to visit here. So just being reminded about community and crew and having a blast, man. I love traveling. I forgot.
Have you noticed a change? Because did you used to live in Denver or you had property there before?
Yeah, we got a little place here and we spent the summers here sometimes. So we spent maybe 2 or 3 summers here. So yeah, I've probably been here for a total of like 6 months or so combined.
Have you noticed a change in like the climbing scene or like, the energy? Cause it used to have a pretty bad reputation for being like the bubble, which I think Salt Lake has kind of taken over.
Yeah. I don't want to comment too much because I haven't been, I've been climbing at the tension shop, pretty much primarily. I haven't been to the gyms. The people I see are people who kind of probably used to be in the bubble. And so it's funny because there's always this, there's like the elitism of the best of the best in Boulder doing their thing. And sometimes people hate on that, but it's just kind of a naturally occurring thing. Like, I don't think any of the top pros that had their little bubble were necessarily like totally exclusionary. It's just like, you only have so many friends you can go out with. And what I think is cool is that it also forms all these other little bubbles too. And, I saw, Liam yesterday. Liam, I think his last name is Bancroft Andrews. Absolutely phenomenal climber. Hadn't seen him in 5 years. And when I was here before, there was this tight-knit group of him and Daniel Fong and Tristan Chen and Roland Chen and, there was Austin Perry. I could name 10 more names there. And they all were out climbing similarly hard. And so I hesitate to say that there's this bubble and it's negative. I just think that there's many pockets of beautiful community within it. And, if you feel like you're excluded from something or it's some like elitist thing, build your own little club like that, come at it from a positive point of view and find something that you love and your crew versus, being upset that, you know, Alex Puccio didn't invite you to go climb Jade with her. Like, that's just probably not going to happen. Sorry.
No, that's cool. That's actually cool insight. Because I think even when I notice the kind of, you know, quote unquote bubble shifted, or like whatever you would consider the elitist bubble shifted to Salt Lake City, I don't think something seemed to have gone away from Colorado. It seemed like maybe it became more specific into understanding why that culture was, you know, quote unquote elitist, not in a negative way, in a good way, but learning that, okay, so elitist culture came here in Salt Lake City, but the focus became very different. Like people here, and I talked about this on a podcast previously, a while ago, a lot of the elitist culture turned into like a proving grounds of sort here, where like from all aspects, you know, media, who you are in the media industry, or making US team, for example, or even outdoor climbing here, it was strange. And so climbing has many, many different facets to be successful in. I think it became very competitive, and that's where I didn't like the bubble so much. It seemed like the negative side of the bubble here was almost worse. Like, I knew a lot more people who moved in and moved out from here rather than in Denver. It seemed like it was kind of just like a little shit talk, you know, and it's like, that's okay to have, I think. That's okay to have. You know, not everyone's going to be happy in any given community.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone about this, and climbing in the community has been around for so long that there's always these kind of little bit of shit talking between people in there. It's like all these pros, they're all great and they all are good at certain things, and they all kind of denigrate the other's accomplishments, yet they all climb together and are friends with each other. And I think that's just kind of a natural outcry of people who are hyper competitive at the top of their game and they want to be the best. And even if they have good intentions, it just, you know, you're always comparing yourself. It's a dangerous place to be in, because we've talked about this a lot with ego and actually even just climbing your best, right? Anytime you compare yourself to another, you're like, oh, I saw this person flash this. Like, I should be able to flash it. And then you don't walk up to the boulder or the climb and just do it the best way possible. You somehow have this preconceived notion. And I would argue that is always a limiting ceiling. Because let's say you are good enough to flash that boulder and you saw, you know, that other person do it. Well, then you're just going to flash that boulder because you think you're as good as that person, but maybe you're capable of way more. Or conversely, you might, you know, not be able to flash that boulder for whatever reason. And then suddenly you feel like, I'm not as good as that person, so I can't do what they do. It's just, so that whole ego and comparison, I'm not saying that I don't do it and that people won't do it. But just be careful. Even just if all you're focused on is performance, you're never going to get your best, because whatever comparison you make always lowers your ceiling. Like, it's always going to lower it.
Yeah. That's 100% agree.
That's my pro tip, because I didn't come up with one before here. So don't be careful comparing yourself to others, because it will lower your ceiling no matter what. And I was thinking about it in a different positive way, where I thought, oh, but Josh, like, I often rise to the occasion when I'm around, like, Tim, when we're going to climb together soon, I'm going to be like, oh man, I'm going to really show up and climb well because Tim's here. It's going to bring out the best in me. But then if you really think about that, that was already in me. And so no matter what, perhaps I could climb even better than you. Like, but I don't know if all I'm doing is comparing myself to you. Mm-hmm. And so it's a dangerous thing in that kind of bubble world, and everyone's looking at each other, and it's like, how are you going to be your best self?
Exactly. Yeah. Just to reiterate that a little bit, I just had that conversation debriefing the homie that I coach here, who had a really good round. He just missed on a couple of things. And in asking him, a lot of it had to do with this redemption idea of like maybe previous things that he knew he was capable of, or maybe wasn't able to show in previous round. And a lot of entitlement just to being like, you know, I definitely am supposed to be strong at this style. And that could be true, but it doesn't help you focus on the things that matter, you know, for the task at hand. And I think that's kind of confusing, because we talk about this a lot, where we see benefit from climbing with others, in that you get creative ideas, you get better feedback and stuff. Like, there's a lot of pros to climbing with other people, or honestly, in anything, in collaborating with other people. Is always going to be, there's pros with it. There's always going to be the positive thing. But to understand the difference between the things that can be helpful and the things that could be hurtful, if you compare yourself to what somebody's supposed to do, that could be a limiting thing. But to like, it's a close thing. And I think that's why people get maybe they just don't pay attention to it and they just live it, you know, like, and that's maybe why the bubbles are so, could be so dangerous. I think that's a great opportunity, but maybe people just don't realize that they're like living it every day. They always go to the gym. They always run. It's like, oh, well, you can't even avoid it. You know, if you live in Denver or you live in Salt Lake and you want to go to the gym, you actually can't really even avoid it unless you climb in like really oddball hours. But there's so many people now that everybody's climbing in all the oddball hours that you're almost never going to have an alone session. And so, well, of course, you're going to go into the gym and of course, you're going to start that comparison process. And I guess the way that I dealt with it a lot being here is dealing with the comparison process first and then dealing with myself and being like, okay, so I have all these thoughts now about what I'm supposed to do or like how I'm supposed to feel or, you know, where these people are compared to me. And then what should I do and what can I do? I think it's just kind of separating the two brains because they both exist and they're both helpful. And we just shouldn't forget that.
Here's the positive part about being in that elitist world is just getting your mind blown. You know, I'm climbing in that tension shop area and some of the best, actually not some of, like basically all of the best in the world go through there at one point or the other. And the people who are there and work there are incredibly good. And, you know, it just is such a great reframing. My last thing I want to say about this bubble thing, which was not a topic I had on the docket at all, but it's a real thing. And it's interesting because I'm in the old bubble. Maybe you're in the new bubble, there's a lot of negative talk in the world of climbing. There's memes, there's mean stuff people say about, you know, other climbers. And it's really surprising. It's really awful because we all climb next to each other and the V17 might be right next to the V5. And it's something that just really struck me where, you know, if you talk shit about LeBron, you're never going to play basketball with LeBron, but be careful out there saying things that are not nice because there's a good chance you might just bump into that person tomorrow. And, it's also why be careful making your assessment based on just random things, because a lot of times you will meet these pros and hopefully they may surprise you by how amazing and great people they are. And conversely, you might think they're the greatest and then they treat you like crap in person. So just remember that our sport is so on top of each other, whether you're in the gym, you know, we can all climb on the same spray wall together or next to each other. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just something I don't love the super negative shit talking aspect that climbing has. Yeah. And I think it's inappropriate because of how close we all participate together.
Yeah. No, well said. Yeah. It's definitely an interesting sport where that might be the best part about our sport is that you can go to the gym and, you know, I can climb with my mom when I go and visit her in the Bay Area, like, you know, and we climb completely different things, but we can build like an awesome time together. And, you know, I can climb with my girlfriend, like almost anywhere in the climbing gyms. And, you know, you can do that in a lot of areas outside. It's a lot easier in the gyms and pretty much no matter what, yeah, you're going to run into people. And I don't know, I always have run into people in climbing and for whatever reason, sometimes the conversations get a little bit weird, or the dynamic is a little bit weird. But I remember growing up and, you know, like Josh was, you know, an amazing climber when I started off and he still is. But for me, it was like miles and miles and miles away. And I treated him with respect. He treated me with respect and we had fun conversations and, you know, kept that connection going. And I've done that with a lot of people in climbing, but it's because we respect each other, not because we talk shit. That's never going to get anybody anywhere.
You can literally go up to, I mean, I shouldn't say anyone because maybe there's some jerks out there, but you can almost always strike up a conversation with the most famous of famous of famous people as long as you are genuinely psyched. It's kind of what Keenan was saying. We're just, you know, when someone's super psyched and, you know, that's who the pros are, right? They're super psyched. So I really do like that about our sport too. And, I like being around that too. I like seeing excellence. It propels me. It blows my mind what's possible. I've been doing this for a long time. I've been around a lot of strong climbers and I haven't been around them for a while. And then I see it again. I'm like, oh yeah. Oh, amazing. And it's just, it totally reframes everything about what you think you know and what you think you're capable of.
Totally. Nice.
Well, on that note, that reminds me of a question we just got on the classroom. So me and Tim, while on the road, actually you weren't on the road yet, but I was on the road, did an amazing classroom number 10. And I think we set the record for the longest one. I think we did like 2.5 hours. It was an epic one. And I just want to let everyone know how just amazing they are. Like, we were just talking in the classroom about how we don't think people really understand how amazing these classrooms are. And so just as a reminder, Tim and I are doing classrooms where it's basically, we solve climbing problems. It's you bring your questions and you sit with us for a couple hours as a group and Tim helps solve them. And it's really what Tim's specialty is. And, you know, some of the questions we solved were how to set for your weaknesses on a spray wall. And I mean, you know, it's that whole thing about trying to reframe what you're capable of, because it's really hard to set for your weaknesses. I thought that was a really cool question. We had another one around deliberate practice and deciding what skills to practice, which I thought was really interesting as well. So if you didn't make it to it, we have the recordings on Patreon. And Tim, you're going to do even more classrooms, right? Tim's really taken the reins because this is an area he loves. And so there's going to be more classrooms, more problem solving, and y'all are missing out if you don't go to them.
Yeah. I mean, we offer for $25 Patreon subscribers, it's probably the cheapest coaching deal you could ever have. You might not get one-on-one access to coaching, you know, like it is, but you're getting different questions and different perspectives and different answers from other people that you may have never even thought you needed help on. The questions that we receive are amazing. You know, I obviously have thought about a lot of those things in my own climbing, but I don't necessarily know how to target everybody's issues. And so it's fun to hear a variety of issues that people run into in the climbing, you know, space and training, the gym in terms of performance, like what mental things that they run into, and not even realizing how they could ask that, where it could be coming from, is a really interesting perspective as a coach. And it's also just like a chiller environment. Maybe people feel a little bit more like okay sharing things that they run into because everybody is sharing that. And it's just a really fun space. It's, like I said, it's the best deal you can have if you want any sort of coaching. And yeah, I'm going to start taking it a little bit differently for the next month. I'm going to do 2 classrooms a month, hopefully one earlier in the day and hopefully one a little bit later in the day, so that maybe people around the world can access that. And if you guys want to find more information, where can people go, Josh?
Go to Patreon, patreon.com/testpiece. I'll put in the show notes. I feel like I should know that off the top of my head, but I'll make sure it's linked. And yeah, just don't miss out, you guys. It's if you love climbing, and I know you do, if you listen to the Test Piece podcast, we know you love climbing. We know you're like us. We are people who really care about this stuff and like to just talk more about it. And, you know, Tim, what drives Tim to get up every day is to solve climbing problems. So give him some tough ones. Yeah. So join us next month and just psyched to see where you take it, Tim. I'm glad you're leaning into it more. I know it's something you love, and I'll still be there as often as I can be, and just excited, man. I think it's a really fun thing we're doing. And I know the community that is already doing it loves it. So doing it more, even better.
Yeah. One more note to add. If you guys are ever nervous about any sort of aspect of the classroom, and maybe that's why you're not joining it, you guys are free to be as included into it or as, you know, exclusive away from it as you want. I know there's people who probably just want to listen to them, and that's totally okay. You can join in, black out your screen. You never have to participate. You can just sit there and listen. If you want to type in a question, that's all kind of up there. It is called a classroom for a reason. And I also want to restructure them to be more like a classroom where we really talk and involve people in the questions, you know, go back and forth on feedback, bring up different people's scenarios. Something that we just talked about in the previous classroom that we haven't even done yet is to do like live assessments of people's climbing things and have everybody kind of go into it. So it's going to be a really fun space. It's going to evolve. And the real point there is, like we're saying, is just to help people solve climbing problems. We don't know all the answers, but we can find a lot of helpful tracks to find answers together. And that's really like, it's just like being able to session together, you know, like not everybody has access to like session with, you know, people who are experienced or think about it from like a good place. And I'm not saying that I'm the best at it, but it's a really good environment for it. And I think the people who are already doing it know that. So
Tim,
get in there.
You are the best. You do have all the answers. And it's only $9.99 for Tim's special Climb V15 package. I wish you had that. I would buy it. But this is the next best thing is hearing from Tim and learning how to be your own coach along the way. Okay, Tim, there's been a lot of freaking hard climbing in the news. It's just, I mean, I know it's nonstop, but I saw some things happen that just blew my mind. One, my favorite of the latest sendings that, you know, that's just been blowing up the internet is Michaela Kirsch and her rampage in the Waco Rock Rodeo, which the video finally came out. And then Marga Leff, what she did in all of Spain in the sport climbing realm, just blew my mind. So there's that. And Aiden Roberts came out and said that he had done two new, maybe V17s. I don't know if he graded them or not. I hopefully I'm not missing the news story where he actually graded them, but two probable V17s. That's a lot of hard climbing, and that guy knows how to climb hard. He's well equipped to say something like that. And then Ryuichi and his progress on Burden of Dreams. I don't know if you've been following along on Instagram, mm-hmm. but it's fast progress. And Burden of Dreams, by the way, very hard problem. V17, I don't know if you know about this, but it's arguably the hardest boulder problem in the world that's established. And one thing on that, because I had a beer with Jamie Emerson, a previous guest on the pod, and he's climbed with Nale quite a bit over the years. And he said, you know, it's surprising that Nale just isn't getting the credit he deserves for having done Burden of Dreams 8 years ago. You were seeing, it's like, wow, look at Will Bowes, look at everyone doing this. And I just think it's good to remember Nale did that a long time ago, you know, and kind of did it on his own and blazed that trail. That was, you know, in hindsight, one of the most impressive sends that we've ever seen in bouldering. So shout out to Nale, shout out to Ryuichi for his quick progress. And Tim, which one stands out the most for you?
Actually, the last thing you said about Jamie saying that Nale doesn't get the credit he deserves, I agree 100%. I used to think that a lot. It could just be like the way he posts, or, you know, the way media works or something. You know, it could be on him as well. But that being said, like, he is extremely impressive. It's kind of funny. Like, I coach some kids, or maybe some younger people, maybe to you, I'm still a kid, but some teenagers, and like very strong climbers, very accomplished, know of Burden of Dreams because of the publicity it's getting from like Will and, you know, other people who are on it. And they didn't even know that there was like a Nale video, or like, and I've watched this Nale Lapnor project video like many, many times. I followed on Instagram when he was like multiple years in a row of him, like, you know, getting closer on it and stuff. Like, they just, I think people forget the difference often. Well, it's hard to realize the difference between first ascents, and not that I've done first ascents, but I've always imagined walking up to something like Burden of Dreams when nobody has done it, when nobody has written a grade on it, when nobody's even said like, this is possible. And then it becomes like one of the hardest grades. Well, Nolly's done that a lot of times, like a lot of different times. Burden is probably the hardest one, but he's got a lot of hard FAs. And just to like be able to figure all that out without any glimmer of hope that it actually is possible, that video goes into it really well. It kind of talks about a lot of factors of why these things even, you know, become possible or whatever. And so going from that to seeing Will's journey on it, Kokoro Fuji is also one of the strongest Japanese climbers that exists, and he's been spending a lot of time on it, and he did not get nearly as close as Ryuichi, but Ryuichi, I think second session, fell on the last move, which is just mind-blowing. We talked last time or a couple episodes ago on like someone else, this guy Elias doing like new beta on it and stuff, but regardless like of the amount of people giving Burden attention, like I like to see like, damn, like what was that first guy thinking, you know, like that's ridiculous. To see all these amazing climbers test themselves on it and still have a good hard time is pretty cool. And I brought this up on the classroom that we did, but Adam Andre came out with a pretty sick video of Bon Voyage, maybe potentially the world's hardest trad problem. And James Pearson is this climber that I really respect. I really like him a lot. And just like the way that he talks and like how he sees climbing. And he just like presented himself so good on this video. But he kind of talked about something in terms of like his own personal validity with like hard climbing. And like, it seemed like, so he first ascended this and you almost like couldn't tell right away from watching the video until he like kind of said that. And then he almost didn't feel accomplished until Adam was saying how hard it was. And that's kind of an interesting part about like climbing is like, maybe Nale didn't feel like It was like insane. And maybe that's how he feels today when he's like finally watching. And like, that's a funny part about climbing and like finding that new standard is like, maybe you won't really know until 10 years later when a bunch of people have tried to prove themselves on it. And maybe people are proving themselves, but proving it to be really difficult. Another note on Burden of Dreams is that we saw Sean Bailey do some movements on a replica simulation that he looked really, really strong on it. So also be really cool to see him actually go out there.
I got a little hot take on the James Pearson Bon Voyage thing, which was a cool video and a cool line. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember the whole thing about it previously, but yeah, James Pearson had climbed a route and then graded it, whatever, and it had been downgraded severely and people had given him crap about it. Did you know that background,
nope. Tim?
So yeah, I can't remember what it was called, but he put up some climb, and it was an E grade, maybe one of the hardest ones in the world. And then people, I don't want to say made fun, but like maybe it got like triple downgrade. Like it went from like E12 to E9. And something that and he talks about in the video, how in the Bon Voyage video, how it affected him. And yeah, he felt very nervous to slap that E12 grade on, and it felt good for his validation to get Al Mondra to be like, yeah, this is freaking hard. But he had talked about how he had kind of like moved past that, and you know, he had gone through that whole experience before, and now he was, you know, finally found something hard and he was nervous, but he was like, I got to put the grade on. And the thing I didn't like is it almost sounded like he had that experience, had his ego just crushed, and then moved past it. But then you could see how giddy he was that Adam still considered his newest route hard. And it just felt like he hadn't learned his lesson almost. Like, I guess it just, something rang untrue. This is mean, and James Pearson's a good guy. I actually climbed on Splasher Red with him in Rocklands, which is
Rocklands.
Stunning. Dude, Tim,
cool
put on your list.
I hear this hot take, though.
Yeah, I want to be mean, but it's just interesting that it's like he had that experience. It seemed like he moved past it, but then he still got sucked right back into it and was really gleeful that Adam also found it difficult. And I'm not sure what to take from it, because it's a beautiful route. Good on James for putting something new up. I don't want to be super negative, but there was just something there that was confusing to me, where it seemed like the story wasn't quite right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, to take that kind of back to like Nale even, like, yeah, maybe it's impressive even that Nale didn't even need that kind of like experience. You know, he already knew deep down. He was like, I was just, you know, pushing myself, rolling the dice over and over again for years and years and years. And that is the process that mattered to me. It's an interesting part about climbing that I'm really trying to work with right now in competitions. Like, people feel only valid when it comes to results, but results are only based on how other people do, right? Like, it would be more awesome to see people. Results in competition are only based on what other people do.
Well, I thought you meant that not just in competition. In some ways, that's like first ascents too, or even in anything. It's like
in that hot take that you're saying that exists, but it actually doesn't exist in climbing. The experience that people have are individual. They become communal when we start comparing. But people can still, even in a competition, have an individual experience, is kind of my point. We just don't focus on that. We focus on the result, and the result is only based off other people, right? I always bring this to kids. I say, well, at this competition that you're doing, why don't we just phrase it this way? Okay, you're going to youth nationals and you're making finals. Well, you know that you're amongst the climbing level of all these people, the other 9 people in your category. Let's just pretend that I've replaced all 9 of these people with Adam Mondra and then all these other, you know, great, great climbers. Tomo is in there. Yoshiyuki's in there. Now, where do you think you're going to land? It's like probably last. And it's like, so go climb your best then, right? Like, if you're going to compete against those guys, go climb your best. And you'll see that. And then they'll structure their mindset a little bit differently. They'll probably climb even better. And it's like, why aren't you doing that all the time, right? And they have to get aware. And myself included, I always have to kind of check myself and like, what do I base my validity off of? Why is it always based off of other people? Like, why can't I understand that process? And so I understand your hot take. I think, and I don't want to bash James on it, because I see it at every level in competition, outside, like in. But it's a really important hot take. I actually agree entirely.
But I also just started out the pod by saying, don't talk shit about people because you might end up next to them. And I would say that maybe James will hear this and want to come on the pod. I would be willing to, I would say that to James's face, but I also want to, in that same breath, say that that climb was beautiful and hard. And what really matters is that he put that into the world, and props to Almondra for coming and doing that too. I guess that's classic Almondra. It's like, hardest thing in the world. I'll do it a few days. Like, thanks. Next. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
You said something before I went off on my hot take about Sean Bailey on the replica of Burden of Dreams. And did you see Ryuichi's little story about how he decided not to try a replica before going out to Burden of Dreams? Yeah, I should pull. I screenshotted it, but something about how he wanted to just have like a pure experience. He might have even said something about like not watching a ton of beta videos, just wanted to have a pure experience. And I don't know, like I have mixed feelings on this, because there's something cool about that. And there's also something cool about a replica. And, you know, but for me, it's really okay to do it however you want. Like, but I guess, you know, there's a lot of chatter around like, does it, you know, people were saying like, if you flash something, but you've been on replicas, like, is it an actual flash? And it's an interesting topic. But I think it's all like valid and just kind of interesting. Like, I don't really care if people climb up. Like, if Sean goes and like does Burden of Dreams like easily because he's climbed on the replica, well, it's not because he climbed the replica. It's because he's strong as fuck. But yeah, any thoughts on that?
I have strong opinions on this, actually. So I think I have no real negative feelings about people using replicas to like train. I think it's really smart. If you want to have a better experience, the better bang for your buck to go on a trip somewhere, and you know, you want to have some like more immediate progress, or like not run into some factors that you probably run into there anyway, and you can, you know, kind of mitigate that by practicing on a replica or something, of course you should do that if your goal is to send. I really, really respect people who find their goals around an experience. And what you hear from that is, for him, the enjoyable experience in climbing is the solving aspect. And sometimes we dilute that part of climbing just because of how much information that we have. I resonate with that deeply. Like, competitions are, for me, like really pure and fun, because no matter what it is, you're like never going to get the information. You have to find it. You have to find it, try it, like go for it, commit to it. You might never get it. Even if you try something, you still got to commit to something anyway. And that's like really what climbing is. Like, I like going to new crags and like totally new areas, new terrain, like even multi-pitching something, or like maybe free soloing something that you've like never seen before, and how your body responds. For Ryuichi, I think at the really high level of climbing, that's probably a completely different experience that's unique that people don't really know. And so for him to be able to make a statement like that, I think is really cool on his story, just to like talk about it and say like, I like climbing because of this. I think it starts like its new perspective on it.
Okay, Tim, I got another hot take. I totally agree with what you're saying. But if that's the case, why did he have to tell people that? Like, what's the, like, if you're going out there for the experience, like it's almost like a hedging your bets. It's like, hey, I didn't train on the simulator, so if I don't do super well, like it's almost,
I see
like
what you're saying.
What's it called? Like,
yeah, you're like setting yourself up to be all right for the failure, I guess, or like setting up the community for that. I could see it being that
way. It's like virtue signaling. That's what it's like. Virtue signaling. Like, I'm the kind of person who just does experiences. It's like, if you're kind of the kind of person who just does experiences, why are you telling me? Like, what's the, anyway, sorry. I'm just talking. Damn it.
Dude, that's okay. Actually, I think it could come off as shit talk, but I actually think it's a really good hot take, because I've seen people do that. But I think that Ryuichi's maybe not doing that. Who knows, right? We got to ask him, but we would never know until he says it. But my guess is that Ryuichi seems to, this is my hot take. I think Ryuichi is extremely pure climber. I think he really loves climbing. I think he really pushes himself hard, and that's why he gets climbing done really well. He's one of the best boulders of all time. And he's like super short, and like all the hard climbing is like super tall. So he always has different beta and like always has to find something for himself. I think he is, this is how I feel about climbing and why I'm on a podcast, is that I want to talk about the things that I find important for climbing. And I think there's a lot of wrong ways to do climbing. That's arrogant, that's entitled and pretentious and subjective, but I don't care. That's what I want to talk about. And I think a lot of people would enjoy to live climbing in the ways that, you know, I've experienced a lot of negative experiences in climbing, and I really want to make sure that some people don't have that. And I've experienced a lot of positive that take a lot of work, a lot of sensitivity to make sure that you can have that experience. I think Ryushi may be doing something similar where he's like, hey guys, pay attention. Like if you go out, and so you're right in that maybe it could be that, but it could be this as well. And I'm going to choose to believe this one.
No, so much better. Cause why am I just taking what he says and making a negative instead of just taking it at face value? Thanks, Tim. I think that's way better. Good luck to him on it. Actually, he doesn't need luck. He's probably already.
He doesn't need luck. He's already said. He's just holding on to it.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, we went pretty deep into that one. I do just want to just really quick on Michaela and Marta. Yeah. So
do you know her send list?
Not off the top of my head because it's too big, man. There's too many. but there was a 15A, a 14D, 14Cs. Onside of a 14A and Oleana. But for me, because I was in Margalef and I know where some of those hard climbs are and they're in that kind of like Perfecto Mundo area. Tim, this cave is so intimidating. Like there's just something about it that it's steep, it's blank, it's pocket. There's no like big rest or weaknesses. And I actually have belayed a professional climber who was very good at the time too. And I want to say that he did not even get to the top of one of the 14 Cs that she did. And, you know, like that's really surprising. And then, you know, Arabea is incredible. I remember seeing, I was there with Ethan Pringle when he did it and it's just this massive cliff. It's just, I think it's just hard to state enough what it's like being under these climbs and how not every 514 is created equal given the grade. Like there's just things that we all know there's V5s that are easy for us and V5s that are hard for us. And just kind of understanding deeply, like how there's different climbs that even if it speaks to your strength, I just think it's so incredible what she did. And if you, Tim, even with your amazing strength, I think if you walked into these caves and saw it, you would be like, holy shit. Good job. Oh, so I just wanted to give her like a million thumbs up because I'm really impressed. I mean, obviously those grades are impressive as is, but I think I just want to like do plus one for like, there's a hidden side that's like, wow, like what a trip for her.
No, I did want to touch on that too. I mean, I think I only saw one clip. I got to go and watch the Waco Rock Rodeo stuff of her and some of the other sending. But I remember watching a clip of her trying or doing Arabea. And I like what her comment was where I think she said Kai told her that all those holds were going to be like jugs or something.
Magos. No, it was Magos.
Magos. And she was like, these are not jugs. And I was like, that's cool. That's like pretty cool that it seems that she picks a lot of climbs that would be hard for girls. And something that I think I've heard her say before. And like when she did Golden Ticket and then I tried Golden Ticket and I was like, this is a lot easier because I can just like keep my hands on the previous holds. And she's like almost a foot shorter than I am. And like, even when I did Too Big to Flail and realizing that Nina Williams had done it, I was like, how? Like, how did that happen? Like, what was she using? What was she stepping on? What was she grabbing? Because I wouldn't have risked my life if I couldn't do my beta, you know? Like, I wouldn't have taken the rope off. So, you know, is she a maniac? Like, what's going on? You know, and like, I only mean this respectively, but like, these people are totally out there. And just because they're not 15D or 16A, it doesn't mean that they're not groundbreaking. And I wouldn't know that just because I haven't been there and stuff. So I wish I could speak on it more, but it seems pretty groundbreaking. I've only done one 14 CD and it was very, 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 very hard for me. I'm pretty sure she did that one too. I don't think it was that hard for her, but yeah, she's an incredible sport climber.
In her Waco Rock Rodeo, she set a point level that passed Puccio's, which had been the previous woman's high. And I think, and it was like one of the highest of all time for men as well. Just really incredible.
Wow.
You know, the thing that's crazy about sport climbing and these hard sport climbs is Arabea has got to be like 40 meters tall. You know, it's a king line. And you have to start by going up this like reasonably hard thing to then do like pull a roof and then you kind of start. But even just that beginning part, like this is what's so crazy about sport climbing, these long things in my eyes is like you climb, it's hard right off the bat. You kind of have a rest, but then you have to like embark on like 30 meters of, I think when I was there when Ethan did, as I mentioned, and he described it to me as something like really consistent with only like a V9 crux, but that it was like, I also don't believe him because you can never believe what pro climbers say about cruxes on sport routes. It just doesn't.
I should definitely believe him, but sure.
Okay. I just,
yeah. V9 seems very legit for that.
Well, I always like, don't know what it means where it's like, is it like a 20 move V9? Like, is it one move? I never tried it. And just that embarking on that nonstop small holds forever. It's such a mental battle, dude. I'm kind of foreshadowing our topic of the day there. I'm so impressed with the sends, and I'll link the videos in the show notes, but yeah.
That's good insight, by the way. I was just having this conversation with my girlfriend, Michaela. And we were talking about like lead competitions and like how, in my opinion, they're just like really not true to lead climbing. I mean, neither is like bouldering true to like bouldering outside, but lead climbing is like never short like gyms are. And like, if you only lead climb in the gym and then you go outside one day or like to Spain or rifle, you're going to be like, whoa, these things are like two or three times, maybe four times longer than stuff. And so, yeah, sometimes you literally do a route to get to the start of a route and you finish off with another route. And it's like, oh man, like, and people who sport climb outside, like, are very casual about it. You know, they're like, oh yeah, once you do the last crux, then you got to just finish off on this chill, like 11 minus. And that chill 11 minus is always where I biff. And I'm like, dude, wow. Like, route climbing's hard without endurance. Like, it just redefined endurance in your head, you know?
What's funny for me when I go sport climbing is that when I'm going for an onside or a send, any kind of send, and I tend to climb these longer routes because I usually route climb when I go abroad, and 40 meter climbs are just incredibly fun. I experience a ton of trepidation and nervousness when I'm at the bottom because, you know, it's almost like, okay, everyone, like I'm leaving now. And you're just like, I'm going to go battle for like the next 20 minutes. Dude, one time I onsighted this thing in Kalymnos called Priapos. It's in that big giant cave. And someone timed me. It took me like 32 minutes or something. And they have like no hands rest and stuff. Like, but you know, you're just kind of on your own in your head. And also your sends or your tries count a lot because maybe you only get a few tries that day.
Yeah.
And I experience a lot of pressure. Like when I force pull on, I'm like, am I really ready? And I remember some guy, his thing is he'd look back at me and be like, I'll send you a fucking postcard. And I just, I just love that. Just perfect. I'm off.
Yeah. Dude, when I tried Bad Girls Club for the first time, it took me, and I didn't know this in the moment. I noticed it after my coach was there with me and he invited me on my first trip to rifle. And we spent 2 weeks there. And the first week I was only trying things like 14A and easier, which in rifle ended up being like really good because everything there was very, very, very hard to do. And then I was like, okay, for the second week, I want to like dedicate to one climb. And Bad Girls Club was just like calling my name for even before I went. And it took me 2 hours to get from the bottom to the top. 2 hours straight, just like trying sequences over and over again. And then when I actually sent it, I climbed, in my opinion, very fast. And I think a lot faster than a lot of the people who sent it, just because I didn't have the endurance, I think. It took me 9 minutes, I think, to climb like 110-foot, 120-foot route. And so like you can be on the wall for a really, really long time. Like I'm at my 8th day on-site attempt, also was like 20 minutes long, and I didn't on-site it. But I was like on the wall for 20 minutes. It's like, dude.
Just that's this, was it like a 13A or 13B?
Yeah, it's 13A.
So it's 13 like 14A. Just super pumpy, iconic, long, pumpy route in rifle that just goes on forever. A true test piece, of endurance. Tim, I think we got to keep on moving on. I did want to talk to you about shoe technology. First, I don't think we should cover the Aiden Roberts stuff because let's wait until more info comes out.
Sure.
Just props to him. I love watching him climb. These things seem like really, really hard. And actually, one of them is a really crimpy line right by his home. And it kind of gave me some Burden of Dreams vibes in the sense that Aiden Roberts is an incredible climber. This was a climb nearby his house. So he was able to kind of siege it kind of by himself. And potentially, and it's in his style, he said, to some extent, And so potentially it really is next level. And so maybe we'll wait until some more info comes out about that. And then let's also, I don't know, maybe we should just touch on it super briefly and maybe bring up more, but this whole, La Sportiva just released a bunch of no edge technology shoes. They've already had them out with the Futuras in the past and maybe some other ones, but
the genius.
Yeah. And I just like, I don't understand no edge technology. And I don't know, just like, can we just touch on that? Maybe we can revisit next time, because I want to know, as an older school climber, what this even means. Like, I love edges. In fact, I throw out my shoes when they start getting rounded, but I know that I'm missing something there.
Hmm. Counterintuitive for sure. Because I think the way that we all know climbing footholds to work is that they get very small. And so of course, if you would want, as you get stronger and stronger and you try harder climbing, and you want to have more precision, right? But I sent Josh a text, because I definitely am in support of the no edge technology. And my very first shoes I bought, so I think I got like rental shoes, and I bought used rental shoes for like $15. I got a couple used pairs of shoes from homies for a while. And then I bought my first pair of shoes, and I really, really wanted La Sportiva shoes because everybody wore La Sportiva shoes. For whatever reason, the solutions were like not that appealing to me, but they came out with the Futura. Like, I think it was my first or second year climbing, and they just looked so good. And even though they didn't have an edge, I was like, well, it's gotta be cool. Like, it's gotta be like good tech. I bought a pair of Futuras, put them on, and I was like, oh my God, like the best, actually the most comfortable shoes I've ever worn. And they were really soft, like a lot softer than other shoes I had worn. And I did notice right away that the edge was like kind of nubby, like, you know, when you step. And so I just had to get used to it. And I had a negative feeling about it right away, because I was like, oh, it doesn't work well this way. But I was like, maybe I'm not working well with this shoe. And so I realized that the tension that the toe provides is actually better, especially on a lot of plastic. I took it to Red Rocks right away, and I liked it a lot better on sandstone. I definitely took it to Bishop, and I did not like the shoes at all. There's definitely places that these shoes really, really do not shine, except I know a climber by the names of Andy Lamb who climbs almost everything in Futuras, which is insane, like including a lot of very hard granite things, which doesn't make any sense. I got to try more granite stuff with the Futuras, but I bought one pair of Futuras and then I bought six more. I didn't try any other shoes. I bought six pairs of Futuras after my second year of climbing. I didn't wear Sportivas for a really long time because I was working with a bunch of different brands, and then I finally got to sign with Sportivas. So, I mean, heads up, I am sponsored by them, but I definitely am not sharing this information. I like to share just like truthful information. But they did update the Futuras. I just got a pair. My last three climbing sessions, I was wearing the new Futuras. Almost nothing's different. I think the strap is a little bit different and the look is very different. It's white and it's pretty cool. There's a shoe coming out called the Mandala, which is like almost like a Squama mixed with the Futura, which is cool because it's like, I think, a different tension in the shoe and a different strap system that looks much better. And the Genius got updated as well. I'm going to try a lot more of these and give better opinions, but I like them.
It's funny how the Mandala probably won't climb so well on the Mandala.
On the Mandala, I thought exact same thing.
Yeah. So I just want to reiterate, Tim, you're sponsored by La Sportiva. This podcast and me are not sponsored by La Sportiva. And the reason why I brought it up was because new shoe technology is a big freaking deal. And I had kind of written them off. I don't know. I just almost like I didn't want to just deal with it in my head. Like, oh, like no edge technology. I was like, that just seems like a fad. That's like dumb. But I do remember being interested in the fact that Adam Ondra seemed to like them for onsite attempts. And he said that he gave them some more wiggle room in.
Oh, the Speedsters. Placement. I forgot about those. He okay. really liked the Speedsters. Yeah.
So it's something maybe we can revisit. Maybe I'll go get a pair and just see what it's like, because it's so enticing to be like, oh, it's already solved. Like, I really like my shoes and I really like edges, but this is a consistent theme for me that I'm trying to really stay open-minded and think, what if no edge, what if I love it where I've just completely pushed away? So, I'll get a pair and let's report back on this because again, like new technology is in shoes. I mean, dude, shoes are important for climbing. So,
drone, the drone heel is something that's like, I think people had an off putting feel about the drone because maybe it was like cheating. But honestly, I put the drone on one time. Danny had a pair of drones. I heel hooked a crimp for the first time ever. And I was like, that's nice. That's like nice to be able to heel hook a crimp. You know, it doesn't feel like cheating. It actually just felt like finally a shoe was useful for it. And I don't think I would ever have bought a drone after that. I didn't really need it. I didn't feel like I wanted to. I don't feel like I need that type of utility that often. But on the same note, but kind of in opposite context, you're right. The no edge technology is really good for like quick foot placements. It's kind of what it's for. And Andra, I think when he onsighted Ildomani, which is a 9A in like Basque country, this is such a badass onsight. I think he was wearing Speedsters, which are actually considered like a middle end, you know, like almost a beginner shoe. But honestly, they look really good for that type of thing. And so, yeah, know what you're using, know why you're using it, and maybe they could be useful shoes is the last thing I'll leave it on.
Good on Madrock and that drone heel for not capitulating to the kind of hate that it got first. That's a long time totally. Ago since it came out, but people are like, yeah, that's cheating. And it's like, are knee pads cheating? Like, is chalk cheating? Like, I don't know. Someday we may have to draw these lines, but they're lines in the sand that aren't real in some ways.
Yeah.
And so I just like seeing people push the limits. It's not like, again, it's like the whole thing. There's no cheating. There's only lying. So, you know, if you're like, is using the drone cheating? It's like, well, it's on my foot. Everyone can see it. Everyone can go buy it. And I think that was a really interesting innovation. And now I don't think I've ever tried one. So now I'm gonna go try both. So cool new shoe tech. I don't know. I like to talk about that stuff with you because I think you're a little more on point with that, where I've kind of just found the shoe that I often tell people, like people are like, hey, Josh, what shoe should I buy? Like, is it a good brand? Does it fit your foot? Great. You know, I've seen people climb hard in every shoe. And yes, there are certain shoes for specific things, but 99 times out of 100, find the shoe that fits, that's from a reputable brand, and get out there and climb. Don't worry about, you know, although Palmer, as I say this, last podcast we did, Palmer was like, change your shoes for slab and try a bunch of different things. But let's start with basic good shoes and then enjoy expanding the quiver.
Comfort, I think, is my most important. If I'm recommending shoes to people, I think whatever shoe's the most comfortable for you that you can downsize like pretty small. I don't think you have to size the smallest that you can downsize, but it does help me. Comfort is the most important factor, I think, for shoes, because then you can have a more precise shoe and you can understand your shoe a little bit better. It takes years of practice to understand what your shoe can do. And I don't know how many footholds Josh has stepped on in a solution, but I just imagine he knows the solution better than a bunch of different shoes. And if he had the same perspective on a bunch of different shoes, who knows what he would think about no edge technology or a drone. They're really popular.
Yeah. Get out there, try them. Okay, Tim, I was going to head into the topic of the day. I'm still going to just plug Patreon and classrooms again. This is where we usually plug it, but it's just been going so well. And a lot of our classroom participants basically just told us, why don't you tell more people about this? Like, it seems like you guys aren't communicating how fun this is and how great it is. So patreon.com/testpiece, join the classrooms. Tim's really taking it to the next level this month. And at the very least, join the lower tier and get the recordings, because once you hear those recordings, you're going to want to show up to the real ones. And that's my final announcement. And Tim, the topic of the day you've hinted at on accident like a million times throughout this podcast, because it's all related. Like, you know, what we do is all related. And I just wanted to zoom into an experience I had in sport climbing this past week, or maybe 2 weeks ago. And just use that as the leaping off point, because it was a experience I had that really bothered me. And when I talked to you about it, you helped me understand where it might fit into my system or the process by which I could get better. And so I want to share the experience and how it happened to kind of set the context. So I'm in the gym. I tied in, Tim. I put a rope on, and I was warming up, and I did 12 minus, and it was really hard. I just got super pumped. It was supposed to be a warm up for me. I got really pumped. I was like, geez, okay. Like, man, I suck. Like, why am I so pumped? But okay, like, great. Warmed up. I go to this 13 plus, which was the climb I wanted to do that day. I had fallen on it a week ago or something on my onsite attempt. And got really close to onsighting it. And I was like, I can do this. I know I can do this for sure. And so I was hoping to do it this next try. I get about halfway up and I'm just pumped, man. Like, but I'm not terminally pumped in like this, oh, I know that I'm screwed. Like, I'm just going to fall right now. I was like halfway up, but this, I just felt pumped and all this negative talk started coming into my head. I was just like, oh, you're so pumped. Remember how pumped you were on the warm up? Like, there's no way today. I don't know what's going on, but like, you're screwed. You're not going to do it. And I'm only like halfway up. Like, I'm not terminally pumped. I'm just kind of like bumming. Like, I'm like, I should feel better at this point on the route than I do. And I felt better at this point on the route during my onsite attempt. But I somehow just kind of go like soldier through, and I am still having this negative self-talk. And I'm like, well, at least go for it, Josh. Like, and then I do it. So I did the climb, and honestly, Tim, it actually was pretty easy on those moves I fell off before. I actually was doing better, and I styled, like, I really committed to the technique and I did the move, and I was like, I actually have quite a bit more in the tank. But that negative talk was so close to sinking me, dude. And I'm really surprised. I just kind of had a moment where I was like, oh, no, whatever, just going to go for it. Like, this is my last chance anyway, so I'm just going to try it. And I did it, but it just really bothered me that I had this super negative experience right in the middle of the route when I had no real reason to suggest that I was going to fall off, and everything inside me told me you're not going to send. And then I sent it with ease. Well, with basically ease. And I just want to like understand how to avoid that, or how to deal with that, or if you deal with that. Just that's my experience, Tim. And I don't like that. I don't want to fall victim to that again.
Yeah. I think, this discussion was really fun to have, previous to this podcast. And it was funny because the idea that I wanted to talk about had just happened to be kind of similar, where the idea that I brought up, and I'll try to correlate it between the two, was that I view climbing best, climbing has, felt best to me to learn, and has been the most effective for me to learn when I approach it with, it's supposed to be a long-term game. And so the gains that I feel today, or the discomfort that I run into today, doesn't really matter for the choices or the responses that I make. But over the course of the next week or the next 2 months or the next 2 years, what habits will I build to then by then, you know, when I run into that same situation, will I be strong in the mind to then make those choices that in reality maybe are actually easy for you? And then you can start to like scale that up, and then you'll get closer to what your actual limit might be. I think this experience that you run into is obviously very, very common. I definitely run into it. I'm sure almost every climber who tries harder routes has run into it. Something I made a comment on when we were talking about it before was that a lot of my guess and a lot of my experience in working with especially like youth competitive athletes is that most people boulder like a lot more than they lead climb. And even when you run into this, like, basically what you're doing, and I kind of talked about this with you as well, I hope I get all the points because there's a lot of factors in this conversation, but you almost have this idea. I think everybody has this ability to like understand what they're supposed to be able to output. And when you doubt it for whatever reason, especially if it's halfway up a route and you're like, oh, I know. And especially if you just had a try and you're like, I know I got to be fresh to do that next part because it's really hard. And I know for sure that I'm this tired here. And how could I be worthy of doing this next part? How is that relevant at all? You know, like, how is that actually relevant to like how you're supposed to try and respond in the moment? And that almost always just provides discomfort, and it almost always just takes away confidence. And so actually it was just impressive that you were able to like stick with that route on that specific try. And that's how I see a lot of comp performances. It just so happens that you were lucky to get out of that mindset. But the appropriate mindset is in the long term, that you understand what causes discomfort. You understand what gets you away from what your true output is supposed to be. Because in reality, if you know what it takes for you to be able to do a whole route and you get tired halfway up, then you should actually still know that, well, you could still be tired and commit to sequences. You could still be tired and commit in foot sequences. You can still be tired and be creative. You can still be tired and adjust your hands before you go. Like, the amount of mistakes that I see when people are tired that they absolutely had control over, they just decided not to have control over them. That's kind of a crazy thing that I see all the time in sport climbing specifically, but also in bouldering. I just wouldn't see that for you in bouldering. And so this conversation also becomes very specific to each person's journey in climbing. Like if you are a 20-year long boulderer and you're like just now getting into sport climbing again, of course you're going to run into way more entitlement issues. You're so strong that you're going to have just done like 20 moves of V4 on this like 13B. And you're like, dude, why did that get me so tired? It's like, wait, hold on the language. If I was in your ear, I had headphones on you, and I was your coach, and I was watching you halfway up, but are you tired? Or are you just unhappy that you got a little bit tired, right? Because that unhappiness can then dictate all sorts of things that you measure for what you're supposed to be able to do in the next part. But as a coach, you just watch somebody objectively and say like, well, where are you supposed to get, right? And coaches have this all the time, this ability to be very direct with you and say like, no, dude, you actually were supposed to get very far. And so why aren't people able to do that? Well, I hope that's what we can kind of solve with this conversation, but yeah, I'll get back to you.
Yeah. There's a side to me that is happy that I was so wrong, because my negative self-talk started at the 12 minus, and I did the 12 minus, but I was really pumped. I really was. I was like, whoa, that was hard for me. How am I going to do a 13 plus? Like, just, it's so interesting how instantly you just tell yourself this story. And then, you know, midway through, like I said, I was tired, and then I did it. And so there's a side of me that's like, wow, what am I capable of? But I think that's like the optimistic side of it. But the other side of it is more like, I'm probably holding myself back all the time. Like, you know, it's nice to think of what I'm capable of and like, wow, that's great. But the reason why I want to like try and nip in the bud is because I think it actually hinders me much more often than I'd like to admit. And the thing that we talked about that I found really interesting is that I have been climbing for a while, and I do know, like, I know often what I'm capable of in the moment, in the sense that there are times where I am really, really pumped, and I just kind of like, yeah, I'm not even sure I can make this clip, you know, or like literally I just fall off because I'm so pumped and didn't give up. Just, you know, I kind of know I'm at that limit, but this was not that. I'm like 3 bolts up on probably like a 7-bolt climb in the gym, and I've given up. And it just like, it really showed me that my mental game was so not in tune with my ability, where I usually think of myself as actually knowing what my true output is and kind of being understanding of that. And so, yeah, I know that it's a long-term process. So it's not just, oh, hey, Josh, just, you know, your secret word is shalamakuki, and then you'll, you know, be performing perfect. Sorry. That's why my daughter listens to Peppa Pig all the time. And that's like the secret club word for Peppa Pig. There you go. There you go. Shalamakuki. Right. So do you have a secret word for me to whisper to myself that will let me perform at my highest level without my mental state getting in the way?
I think that's a good way to picture how to set up the training. And we usually talk about the practical at the end, but we're going to bring up the practical now. So that's a good way to picture why this specific type of training I'm about to talk about matters a lot. So if you run into this type of problem, it's probably because tops for you are tops. And we talked about this a little bit in the conversation. I think this was in the conversation about this podcast. We've talked about this type of idea a lot, so I'm getting a little bit confused. But what I talked about was that I run into this issue because I'm trying to get to the top of a route. To get to the top of a hard route, though, what needs to happen? You need to climb really well. You got to climb really efficiently. You got to be relaxed when you can be relaxed. You got to be aggressive when you can be aggressive. You got to be creative when things are a little bit out of the ordinary and still be very patient. None of that has to do with getting to the top of a route. None of that has to be, your ability has nothing to do with you being able to gauge, oh, how am I supposed to feel at a third of the way up? How am I supposed to feel 3/4 of the way up? So what I always tell people that when I do sport climbing training for my year, probably 90% of my training is not tied in. Most of it's on a spray wall. And the reason for that is because I run into the same issue. And my goal when I sport climb is to be able to do my best in every situation. And it helps to have the whole understanding of where the route is so that you don't like rush things when they're not necessary. You don't want to like be super aggressive in the beginning of the route, even if you think that's like possible. Well, you don't really want to do that, right? That's kind of obvious. It's like one obvious factor there. But when you're training on the spray wall and you don't have atop. It's kind of arbitrary. You're just trying to get as far as you can. You tend to realize that that's the mindset you want to take to a climb that has a real top on it. And that type of training then can give you a word for sure, but you can't just have the word first, right? You got to develop the word as you train on something that now has a top that for you is just as far as you can get. And that's something that for me, I have a very vulgar word that I used to use. So I'm maybe not going to share it, but it kind of has to do with you just like shutting up. Like just for me, a lot of the time, like all that language, if it's not, if it doesn't pertain to technical things, if it doesn't pertain to positive reinforcement in the mind, I don't really use it. And so anytime I notice a negative thing creeps in, I just kind of tell myself to shut up. I kind of tell myself to like carry on forward because it's what I practice. And so that's why it's important to talk about the practical training, because if you don't have that, the words mean nothing, right? I can't just be on someone's ear on a lead attempt and be like, no, stop being, I used to tell myself, okay, the vulgar term was, I was using actually on the wall, tell myself to stop being a bitch. But I would never like say that to somebody. But if I was to say that, you know, to somebody on the wall, it wouldn't really mean that much. It actually might even provide more negative, right? And so you need to develop what a strong mindset would then amount to on this spray wall or whatever challenge that becomes. And you could even do it on the lead wall. You just have to somehow remove the feeling that success means that you get to the chains. That's not success. Success is climbing well. Success is climbing well. It's not getting to the chains, and climbing well might get you to the chains if that's where your body lies. If you're physically capable, you'll get to the chains if you climb well. And that's why that kind of removal aspect. And that's why we bring up the idea of comfort and discomfort, because if you're just uncomfortable with the idea that you probably won't get to the top because you are too tired at that point, and being too tired likely will not grant you good choices or whatever, that's way too much doubt. That is way too specific thinking. That's way too much doubt. And like I told you before, something we talked about with like Jesse Grupper, he's someone who's able to recognize situations. He recognizes more situations or talks about situations that are going to provide discomfort and provide insecurity. I think that's really smart, because then he's just going to target those and just try to respond well to those things. It doesn't actually bother him, or it seemingly doesn't, or maybe sometimes it does. And he's so trained that he's able to respond well in those moments. But of course he runs into those. And if you can't find those moments, then you're going to find them on the wall. And that's not the place you want to find them.
Okay. What I hear from that, that makes me feel better, is that everyone has these moments. You know, because sport climbing is not something that I do as much, I think it's so easy to look at guys like you or women like Michaela. And when you watch them climb, especially when you watch them send, it kind of just looks easy, right? And I mean, it's like that whole Instagram effect where whenever you see a beautiful picture, know that there's 99 not so beautiful pictures. And so kind of to send it your limit, it has to be beautiful. And it's just, I don't know, it's just that kind of imposter, or not imposter syndrome, but this idea that I see what it looks like for people objectively. And so you think you transport yourself and you think this must be what it feels like, but inside they're really struggling or it's difficult. So that's great to know that you also have these moments of doubt. But what it sounds like to me is that you switch over, like when you recognize it, you have a nice vulgar phrase of to yell at yourself and get out of it. And so there's that, and I we can go more into that about how one might train that, but it sounds like just kind of showing up and doing that is one of the keys, and recognizing that this is part of the process is recognizing discomfort and then being okay with being discomfort rather than extrapolating that to failure. Something, this is a little tangent, but it's just something I wonder about. This is going to be more personal for you, Tim. Okay, so you're midway up, you have a similar thing where you're like, this is too hard right now. The temps are bad. Like I feel sweatier than normal. And then you have this internal dialogue that kind of shuts that down and say, like, this is what's just in front of me. So let's climb my best. I'm kind of curious, like for you, when you want to climb your best at that moment, what do you typically focus on? And of course every route's going to be different or bolder, but like, where does your focus usually narrow when you get you've had some bad self-talk, now you're trying to show up. Where do you think your focus usually goes?
That's a good question. This has changed so much over time, and I would say pretty much only for the better. And that's why our podcast is the way that it is, to, you know, slowly discover new perspectives that amount to better thinking. And that's kind of the answer. The answer is that I resort to things that generally provide more success, and it's usually mindset related. And so I try to look for, it depends, like it always depends, like what situation I run into, because sometimes, like, just to use like competition as a an example, because it works well, you'll sometimes go into a qualification, and so usually you'll get like a video sent of the routes for qualification like the night before, and you'll get to watch them, and usually I'll pick up quite a bit of anxiety, because I'm like, these look pretty hard, or like look tricky, or like, I see where, you know, these guys, the route setters are climbing them, and a lot of the time they get cut where they take or fall, and it's like, dude, that was an early cut. Like, that's kind of crazy. Like, or like, yeah, the guy cut like 8 times on this one route. And sometimes you know who the setter is, and you're like, that guy's really strong. Like, why is that happening? And you pick up a lot of anxiety, and then just to take that information and just try to use it as information, and then remove that from like what my experience is going to be, is a really difficult process, and it takes a lot of time. Like, I probably climb routes in on-site that I have never pulled onto like 20, 30, 40, 50 times before I actually pull on. And what I'm doing is running into the insecurity. I'm just like trying to mime and visualize myself on the wall like as much as possible. And for me, it's not solving things. It's not sequential things, because with enough training and enough practice, you realize that your body will probably do what the best thing to do is. And as long as you teach yourself over time, like a new set of tools, then you'll probably respond with the most efficient thing. And then if you don't, you just take that experience and you learn more and you practice more. It's a whole long, that's why it's a long-term thing. But the mindset is something that you can control in the moment. You can't really control your toolbox as much. You can't really control like what your body's going to respond to, but you can try to have an open mind, and you can try to be strong in the mind. And those are things that come and are taken away for different reasons. So it depends. If I have this vert climb that has a bunch of volumes on it, a bunch of blocked feet, a bunch of dual techs, the insecurity is going to come up in a different way. If I have this overhung climb and like it just looks really pinchy and thuggy and tiring, the insecurity is going to come from a different place. And I just try to target what the exact insecurity is, and I focus on the exact response to it that will absolutely provide me strength and confidence. Because I guess, like, maybe I have a different mindset with this, but my attachment to sport climbing specifically isn't to send routes. It's just to do my best. And that's kind of what I was saying in terms of the advice for training it, is maybe some people, and maybe this can just turn into some advice. I noticed that a lot of people see climbing, especially in sport climbing, as here's the route, whether it's in the gym or outside, and like, here's the route, and I want to see how I'm going to do against it, or how I'm going to do on it. I'm going to see how far I can get. I'm going to see if I can do it. I never look at routes like that. I look at routes as an opportunity to present myself to the route and see if I can find good climbing on it. And if I happen to get close, I'll keep it around for a long time. You know, if I'm like really far away, I'll maybe keep it around until I see that maybe it's impossible or something. And that usually doesn't happen. For most climbers, that doesn't happen, right? Most climbers usually use that experience and be like, oh, wow, I actually am capable of doing this, and then just keep trying it. And then they eventually do it, you know? But I think that's a mistake, what I was saying before, for people to look at a route and say, I need to see what I'm capable of. I need to see if this route is like a good challenge for me, or because then you are focused on the result aspect, right? If you're focused on your choices and your mindset, and that's the only thing that matters, and the result of you clipping the chains doesn't matter. Because the other funny thing is that maybe this is why it drives me insane sometimes that I can't pull back onto comp routes or comp boulders. But because of that, like, my experience on one try is the only thing that matters. And so I've kind of sculpted a different mindset with that stuff. And it just becomes what the insecurities are, because I want to feel exactly what you're saying. I want to be that guy who looks comfortable on the wall. And to look comfortable isn't to pretend. You have to find comfort. You have to find confidence. You actually have to be that person. But even like Andre said this a lot too, like right before you fall, you still don't even look tired, but that person will come off all the time. Every time you'll ask them, be like, were you even tired? It's like, I had 2% left. I had 2% left. I guarantee you. You know, it's like, that's a cool, you know, just to even talk to people afterwards. And sometimes people are like, wow, you look so fresh there. Like, how'd you even fall? I'm like, dude, I almost threw up. Like, that was so much for me, you know? So it's kind of an interesting thing.
That really makes me think of the earlier thing we were talking about with ego in the bubble and comparing yourself to others. And I said something along the lines of how it's always just going to lower your potential ceiling when you see someone else compare yourself. but yeah. I feel like you extended it onto the routes themselves, where if all you're trying to do is send it, then
yeah.
you're artificially, like, maybe you could have sent two of them stacked on top of each other. And there's this phenomenon, I can't remember what it's called, but if you give someone a task and you say it's going to take an hour, they'll do it in an hour. If you tell them it's going to take a day, it'll take a day. And so the last 5% of the route is going to be difficult no matter what, no matter if it's 512 or 514, wherever you're, it's always hard right there mentally. And so this idea that you're saying where don't focus so much on the output and the results really resonates with me in that way, where if all I'm looking at, because this happens to me, man, God, this happened. I mean, actually in that moment, I got pumped in the middle of the route and I looked up and I think, wow, that's a long way to go, right? Like that was the thing that it was causing me stress, anxiety, as I was comparing how I felt in that moment to what my expectation was of what was going to be required of me. And I don't know about you, Tim, but I always do, this happens in the gym. So usually on the lead cave in the gym, and you get right around the head wall and you get pumped like right there. And the head wall, usually the angle eases off. In general, this is how gyms are constructed. Actually, this is how outdoors is often done, is you have a steeper section that kind of goes to a little bit more vert. And I always get like, you always get pumped right there. And you, in your head, you know that typically like you get to be more on your feet in the head wall, but I always have this sense of anxiety right as I get closer to the chains, where I'm like, oh, like I can't make it. Like no matter what. And so
Can I take that really quick?
Please.
So we're going to use that to talk about what, when you ask me the question, like, what do I think about? So if I thought about that, because I definitely think about that. If I think about that, the response to that is like the opposite of the issue. So the issue is you're focused too much on, you're like, there's no way. So shut up, right? For me, it would be shut up, Tim, focus on the move in front of you. If you focus too much, and so on the contrary, if you're a climber who like makes too many like narrow-minded mistakes, where like you'll find yourself constantly like enter a section, you're fresh and you're fit, and you just like didn't see this foot, you did not see the sequence. Well, then that you got to look more long-term, you know, and like that's a worse issue. I think it's an easier issue to actually run into the problem that Josh runs into, where it's like, oh gosh, like I can't do this, because to narrow your scope, you'll probably make better decisions, and you might not be happy, and you might not be comfortable, and it might not be the best output you have, but you almost certainly get further. You almost certainly get further, and then you can work with that. And remember, I think a couple episodes I said, assume you don't know. Like assume there's a percentage of you that definitely doesn't know what you're capable of. You need to assume that, especially on lead. You got to really assume like, okay, man, I'm halfway here. Like I know I had an attempt that like I was a little bit fresher here, but I only got like two moves from the top. So how am I supposed to get to that? Okay, whew, all right, shut up. Like, all right, I got to focus on the moves in front of me. Like, okay, definitely assume that no matter how tired I am, I might still be able to do the next move. It might have to be a different level of creativity. It might have to be a different sequence. It might be the same sequence, but I might have to be more patient. I have a lot of might. I have a lot of maybes in my climbing. Like it's weird. It doesn't like, it's kind of counterintuitive. You ideally want to be very decisive and very deliberate with those, you know, decisions. But I think once you find decisions that you're like, you know, happy with, then you go 100%. But that's too early, right? Like you got to be open and say like, this might work. That might be okay. That might be possible. And then when you find something where you're like, oh, that's good enough, then you go 100%. I think a lot of people are too quick to go 100% or maybe too open-minded and they're like, eh, I don't really know, you know? And so we just got to funnel in, respond to what the issue was immediately. It's like, if the issue was, oh, I can't see myself going that far, look a little bit closer and, you know, try to focus on that.
So what I do when I get scared or pumped, or as I try to switch on or maybe switch off the negative talk, is I really focus on beta. I just think like, okay, I know I have to grab this cast stone. Okay, I know I have to get on this foot. Right. And some of my memories of climbs that I've done that were my limit, I just really remember the sequence. And while I was doing it, I think I was probably pumped out of my gourd, but like that wasn't really in my head. Like I just was climbing. But the only caveat to this is that's often when you know a sequence, right? Like you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. And then I really just execute that sequence. There's something a little different. And this is why I think competition climbing and on-site climbing can be so so rewarding is that it's, so that's my go-to when I start freaking out. And it's actually what I did on that gym route is there was like kind of a delicate rock over when you had a pinch. And I was just remembering, oh, I need to get my weight over this foot. Like I had rehearsed the move on my first try. And so I was like, okay, what's the best beta? Just do that beta. But then when you're on siding and you start looking up and you're like, oh God, it's so far. And it's different to try to just tap into intuition. And I know that I've blown some onsites that really haunt me where I literally was a move away from maybe 5'10", you know, and, but in my head, and I could have totally done it. But what I was doing was thinking about the remaining route. And so do you have any thoughts about is there any difference between what I'm talking about when you're trying to flip the switch for red point climbing versus onsighting? I think this applies to bouldering. I think this applies to everything.
For sure. Yeah. And there's too many points. I was going to say a point earlier about the difference between this. And actually, just to speak on that really quickly, I use sport climbing because I couldn't find that aspect in bouldering in terms of training it. But I saw that it was an important factor in bouldering to be able to send things. And so I really favor sport climbing. And this is for everybody. This is my advice to you for sport climbing. Like, you should implement sport climbing in your climbing because it's unlikely you're going to practice this aspect of like dealing with heat, dealing with like understanding what mechanics actually matter, to find the nuances to when you are tired, what should you think about to make sure that something gets done consistently over time, right? Because like, dude, when I was doing Bad Girls Club, like I think I fell on the like fourth to last move 15 times in a row. I almost never fell before that. But it's like for many, many, many tries, I was falling all over the place. How am I so consistent there? I was like, I literally could free solo to the last part at this point, which is insane. I was like falling a 14C like a million times. But like consistency becomes really specific. And so to answer your question about maybe like the difference between the mindset approaching red point or the difference between mindset in the moment of heat is kind of specifically what you're talking about on onsites. And I know I use this word heat. That's just like when you're actually insecure, all the noise is coming at you, you're tired, all of it, all whatever the heat is. And the heat's different for everybody. If you're in a comp and you're like, no, you have to qualify for a final, that's part of heat. And that changes your decision-making as well. On red point, I think everything that I was just talking about, that's like the beauty of being able to project is that you find those things over tries. And so it really doesn't matter. If your goal is to try to red point something in less tries, then you pretty much are just onsighting. Like you're probably doing the factors that are existing in onsighting. You're right also that there is almost like a foundation that's required of you to like have a preset level of a toolbox to be able to look at movements the first time and then be able to respond well. So if you're new to climbing or you're like not that good yet and you're trying to climb something that's really hard, you might need to boulder a lot more first. Like you might need to learn those things in bouldering and like really understand the mechanics of techniques, really understand like how you're supposed to do rock overs or like full crimp this hold or like how you're supposed to lash to something, because then once you're able to do those things, you have that toolbox set. It's what Josh was just saying. You lean double onto the beta. I don't call it beta. I call it mechanics, right? There is beta. There's choices that your body does that you know are efficient or are useful to get movements done. And then there's the mechanics of what is actually happening. For example, on lucid dreaming, everyone knows, hopefully everyone knows lucid dreaming at least a little bit. Let's just start from the undercling and then you go up to the pinch and you're jumping to this right-handed crimp. What are the mechanics at play? So the beta is what I just said. You have this right foot, left foot, this pinch, and this undercling, and you're jumping to this crimp. That doesn't really help you in terms of like, what are you directing your body to do? That's why I call it mechanics. So what you're directing your body to do in that motion, whether it took you 100 tries to figure that out or not, whether it became intuitive, or whether you actually are communicating yourself in the moment, and there's pros and cons with either level of direction for your body. And remember, we've talked about like the orchestra and like, you know, you're really the composer, the person in the front, like directing. Well, there's different degrees to that and different skill levels of that. But ideally, over the course of time or on your first try, you're telling yourself, okay, set the momentum up, set the trajectory right, load from left foot to the right foot, pull on the undercling to put pressure on the feet. And then as you're jumping, make sure that left hand stays, you pulling it in as you stick this hold, engage that and pull the shoulders in tight, keep the chest closed, keep the hips closed and let the legs flare. It's just, you know, everyone does it a little bit differently, but that's what I'm thinking about in terms of mechanics. And so when it comes to a lot of lead things or a lot of like head wall or like if I'm tired, I look at the beta and then I think about the mechanic. And if it goes well That's a big caveat there. So if it doesn't go well, it's because I'm not thinking about this stuff. I'm thinking about, oh, I'm tired. I'm thinking about, oh, I got to qualify. But if it goes well, I'm actually just thinking about, okay, I've got this foot in front of me. Okay, I got to get over to that left hold. Like, really think about the foot here. Like, okay, really be patient with this right hand. Like, hold on to it for a long time. Okay, as I stick this, like, oh, something's happening. And that's also how, like, fast twitch is really relevant in climbing. Like, you can make quick decisions. That's also what I talk about in patience. Like, endurance is one thing, but patience is like, it's like, well, I was just saying beta, and then mechanics is like the secondary to beta. Mechanics is like the secondary to beta. Once you find beta, you got to think about mechanics. Once you have endurance, you got to think about patience. Like, when you're making decisions, endurance doesn't really matter that much anymore. It's the patience to pick the right decisions. Like, that's what you see in Jesse a lot. Jesse Grupper, is his ability is not just endurance. Of course, he's got endurance. He's got so much patience to be in moments of heat and still pick the right decisions and double down on the mechanics. He's just like the craziest guy at being fully like chicken winged and still making the right choices. And again, it's like this second thing, this and, is hopefully what people get away from this. A lot of people can do that. And maybe that's why people run into issues, because they're like, I've already done it. I'm doing the right thing. I know the beta I'm supposed to do, but are you thinking about the beta? Are you thinking about the mechanics behind the beta when that moment happens? Probably not. I definitely don't do that.
Oh, that was really good.
I practice it.
That was so good. And I'm going to just wax a little philosophical here, because to me, that stuff is what makes climbing so fun and potentially useful for life. Is, okay, everything is going, you're in a lot of heat, you know, high stress situation. And this is why I even mentioned, if I'm really scared, like maybe I'm way above a bolt, even though you probably shouldn't be scared when you're above a nice, sweet, sweet bolt, but I'm just telling you, I get scared sometimes. And it's like, again, it's like, who are you then? Like, okay, you know, the beta, like, this is what's hilarious, is like, you know, the beta, are you even trying to follow the beta? Okay. You are trying to follow the beta. Are you actually committing to the beta? You know, it's that patience to remove yourself from the extreme emotions that you're having and do what that, I think I've said this on a podcast before. What I like about climbing is you have a really loud voice that's screaming at you that you're tired and that you're too pumped, that you're not going to do it. And then there's this quiet little voice that's like, okay, right here, you're going to heel hook and you're going to really post up on it. And then you're going to push with your other foot to get the pressure over there. And it's this like calm, quiet voice that sees you through instead of capitulating to the loud wuss that wants to just give up.
Yeah. And recognize, what are you making choices based on, that first voice or the second voice? Because I think that's where it becomes really interesting. When I end up coaching a lot of people, the choices were, people are aware of the choices that they could have had. They just aren't aware of the choices that they actually made. And a lot of the times, the choices that people actually make are based on that first voice.
I'm raising my hand to interrupt you, Tim, because this is one thing that we've harped on before, is that you said people are aware of the choices, and they are, assuming that they are relatively experienced in climbing. But something that I want people to be careful of is, don't lie to yourself. Sometimes I think people hear that loud voice, go with it, and they, even though they kind of know, they start leaning into that thing, and they kind of lie to themselves that, no, I really did try my best. I really did commit to the beta. I really did. And not everyone is like this, but I have seen people who think they're doing the right thing, or they're telling themselves, they're lying to themselves. And if you lie to yourself enough, you will convince yourself, like you always say, whatever you argue for, you're going to win.
You know? Totally. Yeah. And if you find yourself doing that a lot too, like this other advice that we were just talking about that I said also before, like, assume you're wrong. It's just going to help. Not to say that, like, oh, I guess I might be wrong. What happens after that? If you're a real person who says, like, I might be wrong here. Like, okay, so I think I'm supposed to, you know, on lucid dreaming, I think I'm supposed to like stick this hold and then like catch my toe hook on this undercling. It's like, okay, like I think that because, and just to be clear, like, you know, if this kind of resonates with you, it's like, you obviously think that because there's logic to it that supports it, right? Like, it's helpful. Yes, it's helpful, but also takes away from X, Y, and Z things. So maybe it's not so helpful. If you assume that you're wrong and then you try that toe hook catch and you're like, oh, well, then you'll pay more attention to what factors actually are telling you that are actually wrong. Climbing tells you a lot, like when you try things, and assuming you try things with confidence, but you're also aware that you could be wrong. I think Josh knows this very well. I think a lot of good climbers who are listening know this very well. If you try something with a lot of confidence and you go for it, you commit, and then but you're also like aware that like, I could be wrong here, and you come off and you're like, oh yeah, for sure. I should have done that. Like, oh, there's this other hold here. Like, oh, I could do this. You start seeing so much more. And so if you are that person that Josh is talking about, where it's like, well, like you might be telling yourself to do things, you might be directing yourself, you might be assuming that you're wrong a little bit, but you're not doing that enough. So you're not seeing enough information. You're not seeing enough feedback for yourself. And I think given all the stuff that we were just talking about, if you are in a good place in climbing, you might find this stuff useful. If you're not there yet, it's probably because a lot of these systems aren't in place. And climbing is extremely complex to get good at. It's you know, one thing that I feel certain about, other than a lot of the stuff is experiential advice, things that we've seen in successful climbing and not so successful climbing. But a lot of it is still like solving. We're still experimenting with the stuff and researching it. But one thing that's for sure is that, I just lost my train of thought. But what was I just saying? Whatever.
Different pillars. I don't know. I'm off in the clouds too, because I'm thinking about, I have two questions. What do you do when you deal with athletes or friends who are kind of convincing themselves that X, Y, and Z is true, even though it's not. And my classic memory of this is I was climbing with someone and they got really scared and I saw them bail. And then when we talked about that particular move, they told me something about the difficulty, or they actually told me that they fell. But I was able to see them. They actually jumped off. And you could be mean and say like, they're a liar, but I actually don't think that really encompasses what was going on there. And in some ways, I think they believed that they fell off. And so, how do you know that you are accurately assessing yourself, especially if maybe you're more intermediate, or how do you deal with someone when you see something like that? You just fire them. You're like, I don't want
to drop them. You're done. No, it's a thing that, you run into the higher the climbing level gets, right? Because it makes more sense, right? People are much more sure about what provides success. Well, sometimes as a coach, you're wrong. And that's also really difficult, where you don't want to tell somebody necessarily like, you should do this. I often don't do that. And honestly, even if you tell somebody, hey, this is what you're supposed to do, even if you can prove it to them and say, this is better, if they don't know how to find it, and if they don't trust it and believe in it, it's not helpful. And so that's kind of the answer, is in some way, it's different for everybody. This has been my absolute joy, but also my biggest struggle in coaching, is I think something is successful in somebody else, and I finally unlock this person's ability to like teach themselves this new thing and this new scope and like understanding how to learn. And then I'll work with somebody else who might be even better than them at climbing, but then they can't really do that. And I'm like, what? But I'll like talk to them in the same way. And I have to kind of humble myself as a coach too and be like, maybe I'm not asking the right questions. Like maybe I'm not phrasing this experience well enough for them to dissect it. Maybe they're too happy with themselves. Maybe they're too unhappy with themselves. Maybe they look at themselves. Like you really have to understand everybody's issues, you know, like everybody's habits, everybody's reliances, because all of those things. And that's why I've used a lot of those words in mindset coaching, even on the podcast, because I think they're all relevant. Everybody runs into issues for different reasons, but they're all kind of classic. They're also like classic human things.
This is why when you said something to me, and you repeated it here on this pod about assuming that you're wrong about your beta, about whatever it is, I think it's a helpful mindset to me, where I've been climbing a long time and I've always been pretty good at, I want to say assuming I'm wrong, but being open to not doing that. I am not doing something the right way. I think it's a healthy mindset to just have, where it's just always questioning, not just questioning, was there a better way, but just questioning your feelings that you did climb, you know, your best, or whatever the case may be, just always having a touch of skepticism, because confidence is great when you need to commit to a move, but it's also a blinder, right? Like the more confident you if you commit, as we've said, commit 100% to whatever beta or move you're doing, but then you need to flip that on its head as soon as it's done and say, Is that what I should be committing to after it's done?
Yeah. One other layer to kind of what I was just saying about kind of like maybe you have to rephrase the question asked to this athlete that you might be working with. Something that I do and something that I just did today with the athlete that climbed in the qualifier today. And there was two situations on two different boulders where he unfortunately didn't make a decision that would have gotten him a send. That happened for a lot of different reasons. And so we talked about those, but eventually I basically just asked him, but so what needed to happen to provide success? And I think once you can solve that process, so for example, like he was telling me why he made his choices, that doesn't matter to me. What matters is what is the success and what choices need to happen? And then you kind of connect, okay, what choices did you make and why did those happen? What choices are you supposed to make and how is that going to happen? And you find that path together and you're like, well, in the future, when you run into that same situation again, hopefully you make the right choice, right, for yourself and you're happy with it. And so what is it going to take to get you there? He needs to talk through it. You know, like that conversation needs to exist. You could do that yourself. I think if you're really, really good at awareness, you're really good at solving climbing, you're really good at understanding what is actually going to provide success. And in my opinion, not that many people are good at that. And not that many people even try to be good at that. But if you try to be good at that, you're going to get better at it. And what I mean by getting good at that is actually understanding what is the most efficient way to get up the climb. What are the most effective tools that you need to have? What are the most effective physical things you need to be strong in? If you know those things really well, you can solve almost anything in climbing based on any experience that you have.
Can I tell you some of the things that I now approach climbing with that I've gleaned from doing the podcast with you and just see if you think that they're, you know, some of the better tools I've applied.
Yeah.
One of them is this idea that we just talked about recently of just taking the climb, taking the moment very seriously where I'm just trying to climb the climb as best as I can and not thinking so much about the outcome, about I want to flash this, I want to do it because it's this grade or whatever the case may be, and just really taking a moment as I walk up and just say, okay, I'm just here to climb this climb as best as I can right now. So I really like that. Another thing is when things start getting complex, this is not so much on a on-site, but it could be or a flash. I think about what is just like, if I could only do one thing, like what would it be? And this came from that conversation around the mood board climb that really required a large jump. And it was kind of like, yeah, Josh, you know, I hear you're getting your thumb here to get a little bit more momentum out to right. But it was like, you need to jump off that foot. And there's a lot of ways to jump off the foot. I'm not saying that that other beta wasn't important for it. But when there's a lot of noise, it becomes difficult. And I just distill it down to that. And then even in that sport climb that was the topic of the day, where I had that issue in the middle and I started having negative self-talk, in some ways, I mean, I did have success, and it kind of is correlated still to that first one, is trying to, as soon as I can, switch into just do as best as you can right now. You know, just, and you know, we talked about beta mechanics, but even just without going into all those details of what best means, because I hopefully as a climber of a long time, in some ways I just have some of that built into me, but just taking that moment to say, yeah. No, I hear you, Josh. Like you're scared or you're tired, you're not going to do it or whatever, but no, let's just climb your best right now. And so those are kind of some things that, you know, does that resonate with you as far as some of the better mentalities to have? Because it's been helpful for me, Tim.
That's awesome. It's just cool to hear that it's helpful, honestly. Like, yeah, that's definitely the way that I think. Gave me like kind of goosebumps a little bit, because I was like, that's really nice. Like that's stuff that I find really important. So it's cool to hear that somebody else finds it really important. It's mostly the way that I think about it. I imagine it's very liberating for you, because it just helps you have more fun in sessions, I think, and it probably sees more progress in ways that maybe matter to you a little bit more than like seeing results. Because like I said, results are just like kind of byproducts of good things. It's something that coach told me, Justin Cubbage told me this a while ago, like results and like good success are just byproducts of good performance and good trying and good feedback to yourself. Right. And so don't get caught up in the results. Something you said at the very end there with, these experiences for you are really helpful for you right now. And so what I'm trying to say is, whatever you guys just heard, whoever's listening, don't just immediately take that and just take that to your session. that was really important for Josh. And the reason for that is because he does have a really good base of what like best climbing is for him. And he's had so much good climbing over his years. The real thing that he wasn't seeing as much was getting the best in each session, because he's already able to do this stuff, but maybe in that very moment, like, why didn't it show up? Why didn't the best show up? And so if you don't have that yet, you got to work on other things. You got to form your opinions on like what best climbing is. And we have other podcast episodes that talk about that. But to hear your journey and to hear that that aspect of your journey is leveling up is like super cool to me. And I feel like you can progress for the rest of your life that way.
Well, what's interesting is that even though it has led to good progression as far as success on the wall, I would say all of those things actually make climbing more enjoyable too.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like climb. Like, it sounds so ridiculous. It's like, no, but just really like climb right in front of you. And it, you would think that over all this time, I would have less ego and be less focused on results. But I don't know. I just, you get caught up in grades and numbers and your own expectation of yourself based on, you know, it's like you got 30 years of experience to say, this is a grade that you do. Like, this is easy. This is no problem for you. But that automatically biases you and leads to outcomes that, first of all, or actually maybe most of all, it kind of makes it less fun, like to not just climb. And I've talked to people a lot about this, how I've been enjoying sport climbing. I enjoy sport climbing because I have less ego involved, and going out and on-siting and getting my butt kicked on grades that maybe shouldn't be so difficult for me, and then be able to more easily make the transition to just be like, I'm just climbing, like let's see what happens. And those strategies that you've talked about and those things I just kind of enumerated make it more enjoyable. So that's a good, you know, make it enjoyable, make the process work, and the outcomes will take care of themselves. But just keep focusing on the the joy and the process and not the outcomes.
Yeah. No, well said. I definitely think that probably the biggest lesson that I've learned in climbing out of any experiences that I've had, because I enjoy the aspects of climbing that revolve around pushing the limits and stuff. I think that stuff is important. That's why we talk about it a lot, like early on our podcasts. But my most important lessons are the longevity aspect, because I think that progression in climbing is probably inevitable for most people who just stick with it long enough and have a positive headspace. And so if you actually are trying to get that out of your climbing, you probably should focus on this. That's what we've been talking about, right? It's like, oh, if you're actually trying to get ascend, you got to focus on the other thing that is kind of counterintuitive, you know? And so for me, sustainability and longevity in climbing, having fun in it is like actually kind of counterintuitive to progression, but is what gets the best progression. It's funny because I've like kind of become less attached to the progression aspect. I've become more attached to this other one.
But I don't want to make it sound like we're some kind of Zen monks that don't care about being good or don't care. Like, I mean,
yeah, no, man, I'm going to go train.
Yeah. Like I don't want that to be conflated.
Yeah.
That we're saying don't care about outcome and that we somehow have moved beyond our ego. Like,
no,
but it's this battle, and like, it feels good to do well. There's a reason why ego is, because it does feel good. And then what we're talking about is it almost sounds like, oh, but if you want to do well, you have to not care about doing well. But what I'm also saying in that is that it feels good to just climb. And
yeah.
I think that those are intricately linked. And so, you know, if all of your joy is bound up in sending, that can be a problem. I still am going to get joy from sending. I of course.
Totally.
But I think I've been tapping more into some of the joys of, I guess you would call it climbing well or climbing at my best. And so that means that, like, basically what it means, Tim, is I'm having fun the whole time, which is great. And I'm getting better.
I like that you're making that point, because honestly, I don't think it actually happens that way. If you look at if you watch me session today versus like 5 years ago or 10 years ago, it actually probably doesn't look too different. It's just that my filter, my systems, my digestion for my experiences are different. And that makes me have more fun. Am I still trying just as hard to get better? Yeah, of course. Am I still trying just as hard to solve things? Yeah, my desires are the same. But my systems, my digestion helps me do it for longer. It helps me have more accurate assessment. It helps me, distill to things that are actually more important. I'm more accurate. I'm more precise. I'm more calm. I'm able to actually enjoy already very aggro sessions, you know, like very aggressive, very intense, very emotional sessions that already are there. I hope that's something that doesn't get dismissed. And I'm glad that you bring that point up. Like, anything that we're saying doesn't mean that if you unlock these things, you're not going to feel that emotion. No, it's what we're saying is once you feel that emotion, once you feel the intensity, you really need to make sure that that doesn't hurt you, because it can hurt you, and it has hurt me. And so, yeah, hopefully that's understood well.
That was all really good, Tim. I just want to share this one anecdote at the end of the pod, just because it's been sticking out in my head as we talk about decision-making during sport climbing. And the first thing it brought to mind was when I started climbing, it was really all sport climbing was the thing. You know, this is like early mid-90s, and the French were the ones. It was kind of as Sharma was coming up, and they really embodied this beautiful 3 points on, so no dynoing, but just really committing to the beta. And whenever they would fall off, it just, you never saw it coming. And that always stuck out in my head, is that was quote unquote good climbing. And it is good climbing. Maybe some dynamic stuff could be put in there. And clearly that style has evolved, but it always stood out in my head is like, wow, they just commit to their beta. And when they come off, you had no idea that they were going to come off. And sometimes they don't. It was that thing you said, wow, why'd you fall? It's like, I had nothing left. Well, you look beautiful the whole time. And the other side of this calmness that I've seen is I've been lucky enough to see multiple 514 on sites, typically by professional climbers. And what always blew my mind was just kind of how calm they were. And you could see them kind of get lost, and they were still at their limit, but they didn't look frazzled. They didn't look upset. You know, you can see them kind of, you know, they get to a spot and then they kind of get a little mixed up, and you see them lean back, you know, like lean back, take a breath, kind of look up, you know, what I learned over time is that it's really tempting to say like, oh, well, they are so strong, and so they just have a million more miles in the tank and it's no big deal. But that's not what's going on. It's they are pumped. They are tired, but they are keeping that poise so that they make the best decisions. And so I just wanted to share those, because they both really stood out in my head as we were talking about all this.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think it's kind of interesting for me to watch like a lot of really strong climbers and like see resumes, because I personally am more impressed when I see that consistently. You know, I think just seeing one person, and not to undermine people who just have like one, I'm someone who has like just one hard climb in a lot of metrics of my own, but it's, to me, it's a lot more impressive to see somebody provide that mentality across every season, across every discipline, every style. Like Adam Andra, if he's trying to on-site a really hard climb for himself, has a very good shot almost every time. Not everybody has that, you know, and it's because of these mental things. People fall apart. I fall apart for sure. You know, like I'll run into X, Y, and Z insecurity. I'm trying not to. I'm trying to develop that skill. I would like, my goal when I was younger, I used to say this, is my real goal, like my idea of mastery in climbing, is no matter where you place me, at no matter what time of the day, no matter what time of my training, is that if you place me in front of a challenge in climbing, I could do my best on it. And that doesn't mean I have to send it, but that I always feel comfortable doing my best. And if you're a real climber, you know that that's really hard to do. Even if you're in shape or whatever, like it doesn't always happen, you know, but there's a reason that it might happen and you can work on that. And that's kind of the skill aspect that we're talking about, the mental skills. We're talking about the mental skills.
Step one, make sure you sign up for the comp in time or book that plane ticket, Tim, because you can't even get in front of your climbs unless you do that. Good stuff, Tim. Glad that we got to do this while on the road on mountain time, and looking forward. I don't want to give any spoilers because it hasn't happened, but me and Tim are hopefully going to do something fun, climbing together soon, and maybe a little video and podcasting come out of that too. So thanks, Tim. See you soon, dude.
Yeah, good stuff, Josh. That was super fun. Enjoy Denver, and I'll see you soon. I'm psyched to climb together.
All right, man. Take care. Good luck to your boys on the next round. Hopefully they go far.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about Test Piece Climbing, you can check us out at testpiececlimbing.com and even book a session with one of our coaches.